Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. And as we told you on yesterday's pod, we have three podcasts this week, so go check out the Masters preview, Jeff Sherman, and also Wes Reynolds, their fun three-man threesome, golf threesome we did on the pod. So go check that out. And then coming up on this one, just Matt Eumanns for college basketball. So Matt of Vegas Stats and Information Network doing some college football, I should say. We will be doing college hoops in a little bit, but college football, we're going to run through some plays. Obviously, a short week in terms of the short card this week. A lot of games canceled with COVID, but still a lot of opportunities on the card to make some money. And then tomorrow, we will do the NFL pod like we always do with Mr. Executive Director on Thursdays. So let's get to it. But before we do that, I want to remind everyone of another ESPN podcast, Stanford Steve and the Bear. Stanford Steve Coughlin and Chris the Bear Felica put their unique spin on the world of playing the odds in college football, horse racing, and more. Be sure to download and subscribe to Stanford Steve and the Bear, as well as Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop. Hammer time.
Time now to welcome in a somewhat regular guest here on the Behind the Bets podcast, Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats Information Network. Matt, good to be back with you, man.
Yeah, it's good to be back on and talk some college football this week, Doug. Last week was a decent week, not a great week, but see if we can pick a few more winners this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, what's left of the week, right? A lot of cancellations, almost all the SEC games, but that's okay. It's 2020. We know that. We'll take what we can get. Certainly after a dry summer of sports, we're going to look at this glass half full, and these are opportunities to bet. Thursday night, I want to just ask your opinion. There's three games I have circled on the card that I'm keeping an eye on quarterbacks and the status, and I just have to wait. A couple weeks ago when CSU played at home to Wyoming, I said if they go to O'Brien, I'm all in. But if they're going to do the dual threat guy, I'm not. And they went to O'Brien at the last minute and they won outright. I like Colorado State if I can get 14 and a half and 15, but that's only if Boise State's down to the third string. How do you feel about this game with the Broncos on the Smurf turf?
Well, my week got off to a poor start last week on Friday. First of all, after my show at VSIN, I was driving home, pulled into my gated community where you used to live, and two black cats ran out in front of my truck. One was chasing the other, and I said, that's a bad sign for the weekend. About 15 minutes later, Boise State's quarterback, Jack Sears, got knocked out of the game. The third stringer came in, could not pick up a first down, and that game was over in a hurry. You just can't keep punting back to BYU. It's going to be an uphill struggle. And that game was over when Jack Sears left. So the situation with Hank Bachmeier and Sears – makes it a little difficult to bet Boise State at this point. Like I said, the third string quarterback that came in last week, I can't even remember his name. I was so disgusted. I turned the game off and stopped watching at one point. So I would probably lean Colorado State here, but this is a game I passed on because of the quarterback situations.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the guy and what he looked like and the constant punting, I actually kept betting BYU. Yeah, I just kept betting BYU. I was like, look, they're going for blood. They've been doing this all season in primetime games where they want style points. And I think it's a big recruiting tool for the Cougars if they can get their quarterback invited to the Heisman. Now, he's not going to win. I don't think he will. But if he can get votes enough to get invited, that's a huge thing. So they wanted to pad his stats a little bit, and they did a little bit of that. So
yeah, Zach Wilson is going to have a big night. You knew that at that point. Because if Boise keeps punting back to BYU, they're not going to let up. This is a regional type of rivalry, and it's a huge boost to the BYU program if you can pound Boise State like that. And so I didn't expect there was going to be a letup. I did the same thing you did. First of all, I was so ticked off about the Boise bet going sideways that I jumped on the app to bet BYU live too. I think I laid 10 and a half or something. So
it was, yeah, I was laying like 23 or something. But I'll say this. I think CSU is a much better team with O'Brien. So you don't want to throw out the stats with against Fresno State, but I mean, they had some goal-to-goal situations on fourth down. They didn't complete it. They overthrew the wide-open tight end. So that game was a little misleading, at least the result was. And so I think CSU could be interesting if it's the third stringer for and it's Fennigan is the last name of the third-string quarterback for the Broncos. But let's move on. Let's go to the weekend. I know you do have some games scheduled. I just wanted to kind of pick your brain about that Thursday game. I think the big kind of question mark is the BC Notre Dame game, right? It opened around 14. It's under 14, and it's the, you know, it's old classic handicapping. Is this a flat spot for the Irish celebrating? Crowd storms the field, taking down number one Clemson. Now they got to go on the road to Chestnut Hill, and BC is obviously much better than I think sort of their name in the last 5 years would suggest. They have a decent quarterback, but it's still an Irish team that I thought was pretty solid on offense. That's what I took away. But it was an impressive team on offense that can actually play with the big boys, as opposed to we saw with that Manti Te'o team a few years ago against Alabama in the championship game.
Yeah. Are you still dating Manti Te'o's ex-girlfriend, by the way?
No, I'm not.
I knew you were for a while. You know, this every handicapper in the world is just going to parrot the same phrase about the letdown spot, right? Because it's pretty obvious what the Irish are facing this week after that Clemson game. I liked the Irish last week. Hat tip to Stanford Steve for giving out Notre Dame on the money line last week. Yeah. You know, it didn't look good when Ian Book had to go 90 yards at the end of regulation to force overtime. But how about Clemson's clock mismanagement at the end of regulation? I mean, just horrendous. You wonder if Dabo Swinney hasn't been in that situation enough times to know instinctively to do the right thing. But that was really, really poor the way Clemson mismanaged the clock. But, hey, the Irish will take it. I'll tell you what. The other thing about BC I like here is Phil Jurkovec is a transfer from Notre Dame, former four-star recruit. He's BC's quarterback. He passed for two touchdowns in that 34-28 loss at Clemson on Halloween. And this BC team is much improved under Jeff Hathley, 4-1 as a dog this season. You know, the flat spot aside, which it's a definition of a flat spot. Maybe Brian Kelly will get his team up and we will look like fools for talking about this all week. But I got to think this BC was a little bit flat last week against Syracuse because the Eagles were looking ahead to this game, you know, and Notre Dame, you got to think is going to be a little bit flat coming off the Clemson game. So Circus Sports in Vegas opened this 15, I think. When I was on the app Sunday morning when the opening lines went up, my take was going to be anything at 14 or higher. I was going to play BYU. Excuse me, I was going to play Boston College. And Circa opened at 15. Before I could even touch one key on the app, it had dropped to 13.5 or 13. So there are guys, you know, looking to play that right away. I'll still take BC. I haven't bet this yet because I want to see if a 14 pops up. You know, you don't have to race to take 13.5. It's not that big a deal. Maybe a 14 will pop up by Saturday, but BC is going to be my side in this game.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at that same thing. I obviously not going to lay it. I was thinking about maybe a first quarter, depending on what it comes out as. I mean, these are kind of things you can do, but sometimes you can get too cute as well, right? You want to take the larger sample size. If you think it's a flat, you just, there's no guarantee it's a exponential thing. Like, yeah, we've seen teams come out flat and then maybe rally second half, but we've seen it the other way around. They only have enough in the tank to kind of hang around first half. And also you don't know who's getting the kickoff. So there's ways to be too cute. Yeah, that's the only side I would play. Now there's a couple games that caught my eye. Maryland was a team I was looking at the back plus 25.5, but probably a week too late. Just probably was chasing that because I liked them last week against Penn State, but in fire. But that game got canceled. I'm curious to get your opinion on a couple of these Big Ten games. So I mentioned earlier about quarterbacks. I think I have to play Wisconsin if we get the stud freshman playing. And I think it's going to be a game time decision and pass a test on Saturday morning, from what I understand.
Yeah, Graham Mertz threw for 5 touchdowns in that season opening win against Illinois. He looked really good. Obviously, I was surprised he didn't win the job last year. Jack Cohn won the job, and Cohn broke his foot in October, and that's why Graham Mertz got the starting job. He wasn't even going to be the quarterback. This game is very intriguing handicap because the Badgers haven't played since October 23rd. You might say, well, that's a good thing. They're going to be well-rested. They're going to be healthy. They overcame all the COVID issues, and it's going to be a fresh team. But also, I mean, how much rhythm can you have at this point? It's almost like starting the season over again. And, you know, Michigan's has played 3 weeks in a row, should be pretty ticked off after being embarrassed the past 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, I think Circus Sports opened this I want to say Michigan minus one or two, something like that. This is not a game I was planning on betting, but I'm seeing this line shift all the way. Are you seeing Wisconsin 4.5 now?
I see 3.5, but
yeah, this screen I'm looking at has been a little bit screwed up today, but it's showing 4.5 in a bunch of books in Vegas.
There are some 4.5s as well. And, I see some 3.5s.
4.5 seems like an over-adjustment to me, an overreaction, especially for a team that hasn't played in nearly a month, right? And still, Graham Mertz is a freshman quarterback. I know the big house is not the same with no fans. And I'm really disgusted with Michigan, like a lot of people are. I know a lot of sharp bettors who were on Michigan last week, and we all got crushed at the same time. Mm-hmm. Who's the biggest fat loser coach in college football right now? Is it Harbaugh? Is it James Franklin? Is it Chip Kelly? All those guys have been major disappointments. It's tough to have a lot of faith in the Wolverines at this point. Like I said, I backed them last week. They're really never in the game against Indiana. Just got pushed around. That was a joke. That was the best game Indiana had played by far.
I know, right? That's what we keep thinking they're going to come back to earth and they step it up.
It's funny how the perceptions, people's perceptions of teams are altered by a result here or there. You don't really dig into the box score. Indiana never should have beat Penn State. James Franklin's such a buffoon. You basically could have taken knees and run out the clock, and Indiana wouldn't have had a chance to win that game. But Franklin gives it away. It's a gift. Indiana wins. It's a wild finish. Everybody's fired up. Hey, credit to the Hoosiers. They took advantage of Penn State's mistakes. Never should have happened, but they won the game. Then the Rutgers game wasn't that impressive either. You know, and Indiana was averaging something like 2.3 or 2.8 yards per carry after two games, and then just totally dominated Michigan. So that's something I couldn't really foresee looking at the first two Indiana games. And then Michigan, Wolverines went on the road in week one and destroyed Minnesota by 25. You know, it's 49-24. Looked very impressive. And I see Joel Klatt on Fox dressed up in his turtleneck sweater saying, this is the best Michigan team Jim Harbaugh has ever had. This is a playoff contender. All right. Now, 2 weeks later, Michigan's 1-2, has been embarrassed two times. So what do you believe? Is Michigan as bad as it looked last week? 4.5 looks like an overreaction to me for a team that hasn't played in a month. I might actually have to bet Michigan again.
Well, I couldn't fault you. I do like the other side, but I got to wait on the quarterback play. I think it comes down, I said it last week, Michigan's physicality on the corner position. They insist on going man, although a couple times they did go to the zone and they were beaten there. Now, Penix threw some ridiculous passes on like 3rd and 12 and things like that. But the Wolverines just don't have that like punch, so to speak. And I just think they're dead. I mean, I just think they're like lifeless right now. And I think, you know, look, let's face it. It's a weird vibe right now in 2020. I don't know what it's like to be a 19, 20 year old thinking you're going to play big time college football at the big house and have packed crowds and then have to wait and then think your season's canceled, only see it back, come back on. Then you lose to your rival. And who knows how these guys, I mean, you always tease me about playing amateur psychologists, but I wouldn't be shocked if there's a couple teams that are good and just go off the rails, right? Like there's a chance that Michigan's a better team, and we're reacting to Wisconsin against a horrible Illinois team. I mean, they beat them at Camp Randall. What do you expect? They're supposed to crush them, but we don't know.
That's kind of my point there, Doug. I think people are overreacting a little bit to what Wisconsin did against Illinois. This Illini team is terrible, terrible. Terrible. I bet Minnesota last week. I bet Minnesota minus 7. I woke up Saturday morning. I said, yeah, I think Minnesota's going to blow out this team because I felt in the preseason Illinois might be the worst team in the Big Ten. You know, people are getting a little bit carried away with Lovie Smith and what happened last year. And then you watch that first game against Wisconsin, you're like, yep, this Illinois team does suck.
Confirmed.
Again. And, if you look at the Wisconsin offense, it's not like they got a bunch of playmakers. You know, they lost Jonathan Taylor and a couple of their top receivers from last year. It's not like Wisconsin has a bunch of playmakers on the offensive side of the football. So to see the Badgers, and by the way, their practices have been disrupted now for a few weeks. So this has been a really awkward situation for the coach who had COVID, quarterback who had COVID. Half the team, you know, is affected by this one way or another. And all of a sudden you're a 4.5-point road favorite at Michigan, which is off two embarrassing losses. I have to look at the Wolverines as home dogs here. And I didn't want to be on this side when the week started because I was so ticked off about what happened in the Michigan-Indiana game last week and so discouraged by watching Michigan get pushed around in that game. And I agree. I think Don Brown's defensive philosophy is just off. He doesn't have the talent to do that. But I can't see Michigan as a 4.5-point home dog, all things considered, when you look at the big picture in this game.
Well, we talked about a flat spot earlier with Notre Dame, and Sparty was certainly on one last week going to Iowa City, and they got rolled. 49-7 is your final. Hawkeyes cover the 5.5-6. Now, the question is, are they catching Indiana on a flat spot? Sparty at home here with the Hoosiers in town. It's mostly a 7 everywhere. There are a couple 6.5s. It's Sparty or nothing for me, but maybe this Indiana team's pretty good. I just don't want to be caught chasing it. You know what I'm saying? Chasing my Indiana money.
Yeah, I'm not really chasing the Indiana money here. I'm playing Michigan. I already played Michigan State plus 7.5. Circa opened this 9. I knew it was going to drop. Nobody wants a piece of the Spartans right now. You could look at it and say, well, the win over Michigan's not that impressive because the Wolverines are pretty bad. Spartans go on the road and they're down 35-0 at Iowa before you can blink, right? And nobody wants to back a team like that. But at the same time, you see this, if you've bet sports, you handicap it years for years and years and years. You see this situation so many times. People get so fired up about a team off a huge win. Indiana's in the top 10 for the first time, well, it feels like forever. Like I said, the first two games were actually not that impressive. Last week against Michigan was the A-plus performance for the Hoosiers. It's tough to back that up. You're going to go on the road and lay more than a touchdown at East Lansing. This Michigan State team I don't think is as bad as it looked against Rutgers in that turnover fest or, you know, in the flat spot last week at Iowa City. I just think it's going to be hard for Indiana to come back and play its A game again, and that's what it's going to take, you know, at least a B-plus game to cover 7.5 on the road at Michigan State. I've got to play an angle that has worked for years, and that's, against a road favorite in a flat spot like this. Notre Dame, Indiana, I knew those were going to be teams I was going to be looking to fade this week. I had Boston College and Michigan State circled before the numbers came out, and I had my mind made up that I would take 14 or more with BC, and I would take more than 7 with Michigan State. So I took 7.5 with the Spartans.
Okay, so you're on Sparty, BC, on those flat spots. I think the only game I strongly like is Rutgers. I just think it's one of those things. Well, Rutgers is better than I thought coming into the season. I liked them watching them play Ohio State last week. There's fight in them. And we just talked about Illinois. I think this could be just kind of a miserable Illinois team going to New Jersey on the road, just not really vibing it. I think this could have blowout written all over it.
Yeah, like I said, I've been looking to fade Illinois too, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I think Greg Schiano's a heck of a coach. He brought in more talent than people think. It's going to take some time for Rutgers to take that next step, but they're better now than I thought they were going to be. And I thought they were going to be better because I know Schiano, and he's not the guy who's going to sit back and say, well, we're going to take 3 years and he's going to accept losing. No, that's not the case. He brought in some talent right away. And, you know, this Illinois team might just, ESPN's missing out on an opportunity. Instead of Dr. Phil, you could have the sports version, Dr. Doug, and you can sit down and you can break down the psychology of these football teams each week. I think it would be a great show.
Says the guy who just circled 2 flat spots on his card.
How about this Illinois team, Doug? Have they quit on the season, Dr. Doug? They're pretty close. I think the Illini are pretty close to just saying the hell with it.
I think when you're stuck in like bottom cellar dweller team and you have a glimmer of hope and you have a coach and all that, I think Rutgers like gets up for this game more than they do other games when they have a chance to roll here, and I think they're up for it.
I agree. Teams like that get more fired up when they realize, hey, this is a team we can beat. And I think Rutgers is going to be pretty focused on this game. So I did not lay the points here, but it would be Rutgers or pass.
Let's round out the Big Ten talk with teams we've talked to quite a bit about on this pod. I've been on Northwestern every single week, and they've been cashing. I don't know if I can pull the trigger here. -2.5 at Purdue. What's going on with Moore, and how do you see this game for your alma mater?
Well, I wish I had more information for you. I sent a text to a friend who's connected and goes to practices. I says, Rondale Moore going to play, and he didn't know yet. So I took Purdue +3 yesterday. Circa opened this Purdue -2. That's what I made the number. If it was if it opened Northwestern +3, I was going to play the Purple Cats. That was going to be my buy sign because I like Pat Fitzgerald, the Big Ten's version of Fitzmagic. I like him in the road dog role. And I think that's where Northwestern is at its best. So at +3, I thought that was going to be a pretty good bet. Indiana grad transfer Peyton Ramsey has not been spectacular. He's not put up great numbers, but they are better, much better offensively with him this year, just his experience. They were totally incompetent, the Cats, at the quarterback position last year. Northwestern defense has allowed 12 points per game, but this is going to be the biggest challenge. David Bell, and if Rondale Moore is on the field, this Purdue offense could be explosive. But we don't know if Moore is going to be on the field. I just took 3 yesterday thinking that it's going to be a good bet if Moore plays. We'll see what happens here. We'll try to get some more information on this game. It's a tough one to fire on at this point before you know what happens. Rondale Moore, I mean, he's Purdue's top NFL prospect, maybe a first round draft pick, and he makes a big, big difference if he's on.
Yeah. And that just makes Bell that much better too. I mean, right. Bell's a solid, solid player, but if defenses have to contend with Moore, then that opens up opportunities for Bell. I think it's gonna be a great game. I think we're gonna learn a lot about both teams. I've been obviously keeping an eye on this Northwestern team, 3-0 ATS. And if you look at the sort of the scores, like that win over Maryland looks a little bit more impressive with what Tua's brother's been doing. And I just think they took care of business with Nebraska. It was a little bit of a sweat on the cover, but you're right. They're better in the dog role. And they that Iowa game, they had a slugfest, slobberknocker in the second half, shut them out in the second half. And I thought it was a pretty nice win, all things considered. So we can table the Big Ten talk for a little bit. Let's keep it moving here. You and I have the same game circled. I kind of got talked off it. Let's go to a night game with Utah laying it's now 3.5 with UCLA. And the reason I got talked off it is just because I've heard it's just a lot of COVID concern there. And obviously they don't have Moss, their running back or their quarterback from a year ago. Not that their offense was anything to write home about, but I loved betting Utah a bunch last year. They were just so rock solid on D. They've lost a lot of guys on D, and I think this Bruins team is soft, but I'm now reluctant to lay the 3.5 here just because of all the variables I just mentioned.
Well, I laid 3 with Utah yesterday, and it was, you still might be able to find a 3 out there. I'm not sure, but as of yesterday, there were a bunch of 3s out there. I'm looking to fade UCLA. I watched the start. I actually watched most of the UCLA-Colorado game last week, and I've said this.
Yeah, me too.
It's amazing how bad the Bruins are defensively.
Wide open dudes, just wide open.
Oh, man, unbelievable. I said this last year. Jerry Azzanaro, who's a defensive coordinator for UCLA, it's got to be one of the worst defensive coordinators in the country, okay? UCLA ranked number 112 last season in defense. How did Chip Kelly not replace this guy? If you watched UCLA last year, the defense – was clueless in so many situations, so many games. Jerry Azzanaro is a dinosaur. Chip Kelly should have replaced him. Chip Kelly's got so many issues within that program that would have been an easy move to make. That would have been a step in the right direction. Rocky Long resigned at San Diego State, one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. He has a history with UCLA. Actually, he took the Aztecs to the Rose Bowl last year and beat the Bruins. Chip Kelly could have hired Rocky Long as his defensive coordinator. That would have been a great move. I don't think he even talked to him. And he kept Jerry Azzanaro. The game has passed Chip Kelly by, and I was wrong about this. I thought it was going to be a really good hire at UCLA. It's not. Dorian Thompson-Robinson's a talented quarterback, but he's still got turnover issues. Mm-hmm. And there's some things, you know, he's a little bit loose back there, and there are things I don't like when I watch him. I'm banking on one of my favorite coaches, college football, Kyle Whittingham. Obviously, the COVID issues are a concern. I've read about those just like you have and everybody else. And I was a little bit hesitant, but I said, I'm going to go ahead and lay the three with Utah because I don't think this number is going to drop. It's just a bet against a really bad Bruins defense. And the fact that I don't think Chip Kelly really has a clue how to turn this thing around right now. Zach Moss was a stud. So was Huntley. Utes are losing a lot, but I'm just going to bank on Kyle Whittingham here. He has won and covered the last four against UCLA, the last three by a score of 138 to 130. And Chip Kelly, 4-9 against the spread at the Rose Bowl as UCLA's coach.
You know, that's the whole thing. It's the brand of Utah. You know that Whittingham's is reloading with his guys, right? Like tough dudes who are going to come. You know what you're getting. They're not going to play stupid. And they're going to play physical. And they're going to own the trenches. And you don't need a big name quarterback to hit a guy wide open in the secondary against this UCLA defense. So that's kind of why I've been talking myself back into the Utes. It's just one of those certain games where you're just like, this is about scheme. This is about coaching. And I'm sure Whittingham's got a decent enough quarterback and a decent enough running game. And that the defense is still going to be tough. That I love betting on Whittingham. I think he's a total stud coach. I think they got robbed back in the day, the year they had Alex Smith. They should have been able to play for a championship. They did not. And he's just been a stud. He's been there umpteen years. So that's why I'm leaning there and I'm probably going to pull the trigger. But I understand why you're just kind of doing it regardless. Another game I'm on, or at least thinking about, is Stanford. I thought Colorado played well, but I think it was more deficiency against UCLA, as we talked about. It's all about if Mills is playing, I'm laying the seven. If he's not, I may have to grab the seven.
I actually think there's 6.5s.
I'm sorry. It has come down. You're right. There are 6.5s out there.
It would be Stanford or pass for me. Like I said, I think Colorado's win last week was a little bit phony just because UCLA was so awful. And Stanford actually, I don't think played as bad a game as the score looks against Oregon last week. Just the field goal kicking issues. David Shaw still drives you crazy with his game.
I know.
Is how conservative he is. But if you get good quarterback play, like you said, if you have Mills, a quarterback, I think Stanford's actually got some potential to be decent this
season,
despite what you saw last week. A lot of times people draw conclusions off of one game. Like I talked, you know, we saw Michigan in the first week. Ah, man, this is Jim Harbaugh's best Michigan team. You got to be careful in drawing too many conclusions off watching a team for one game. I think Stanford still has the potential to be decent.
Yeah, and the missed – short chip shot field goals will also give the Cardinal credit without their starting quarterback. They got the ball close enough to miss chip shots, right? On the road against a decent Oregon team. So I think Stanford, it's tough to lay points with them for the reasons we've mentioned with Shaw, who just likes to win every game by 3 or 4 points. But Colorado, like you said, a little bit phony win. Looks like each of us have one more play to get to. And you want to talk about it, you know, a game that's, let's face it, is off the reservation a little bit. In another game that's not on everyone's radar is Nevada, who played a week ago, and they are now laying 17.5 to New Mexico squad. And I don't know much about the Lobos. What do you got?
I like the Lobos. I thought they were going to be the most dangerous dogs in the Mountain West this year because of the coaching. Danny Gonzalez comes over from Arizona State, hires Rocky Long. I just talked about, how highly I think of him as a defensive coordinator. Carson Strong's off to a strong start for the Wolfpack. 73.3% completions, 1,181 yards, 9 touchdowns, no picks. Wolfpack 3-0 straight up in ATS. They've looked really impressive. Probably been the most impressive team in the Mountain West to this point.
Yeah.
Well, New Mexico just is a different team. It's like a different organization when you fire a clueless coach and you bring in a guy who knows what he's doing. And in this case, you bring in two guys, Danny Gonzalez and Rocky Long. And they look much more organized. They look like a professional football team again. And, they were a circus under Bob Davey the last couple of years. And the Lobos are just relentless with the rushing attack. Last week when I talked with you on this podcast, I was really considering playing New Mexico plus 16.5 at Hawaii. And the Lobos ran for 279 yards in that game, took it down to the wire, 39-33, and had a shot to win that game. As And that line crashed from 16.5 to 14. I was hoping it would move up to 17 when I talked to you last week, and it never did. It went the other way. So there was some respect for the Lobos in the market. I actually think this is a tough travel spot for them. They're not playing home games. They're kind of a program on the move because they can't play in New Mexico. They've almost relocated to Las Vegas. So this game is going to be at Sam Boyd Stadium in Vegas.
The Lobos, nice.
The Lobos have gone from San Jose to Honolulu, now to Vegas, to face a Nevada team that has not played, not left the state yet this season. So it's not a great situational spot. But I think this Lobos team is showing a lot of fight. I love the way they played at Hawaii last week. And I'm going to take the – I took the 17.5, actually. This opened at circa Nevada minus 13. It got bet up to a point where I said I've got to take the 17.5, so I did take that. And like I said, the game is in Las Vegas. So if you look at the screen, it's a little bit confusing. But it's supposed to be a home game for New Mexico, and it's going to be played at Sam Boyd Stadium.
Yeah, I was looking to fade Reno off the win over the UNLV for the Cannon, but I just couldn't pull the trigger on Utah State. I think Utah State's pretty bad. Now they got rid of their coach. What do you think of Fresno lane 10 there?
I don't know about that. Fresno's actually shown a lot of signs of improvement. I know you were on Fresno last week against UNLV. Utah State.
Got there late. Got a field goal with like 2 minutes to go.
Well, it got there, you know, because here's another thing. Marcus Arroyo, the UNLV first-year coach who was Oregon's offensive coordinator, he's a bet-against coach right now. He's still figuring out the job. He's making game management mistakes. His play calling is not that good. So he's going to be a bet-against guy, I think, this first season. I thought Gary Anderson was a dead man walking at Utah State, and that was a team to fade. It's just difficult to lay that number of points on the road with Fresno, but you're not getting, you know, especially the coaching change might be a positive for the Aggies,
yeah,
right?
And that's
what causes you some pause in that game is Gary Anderson's out the door. And that with the coaching change, you might see Utah State play a really inspired game this week.
All right, one final game before we let you go, Matt, and it's a total. And I know you don't like playing totals, but I know you like talking Hawaii football, though this is not on the island, so it's not the bailout game. But they're at San Diego State. We saw this Warriors offense sort of get stymied against Wyoming a couple weeks ago on the road. And this time they're facing at San Diego State. And I like the Aztecs defense. Obviously, that's their calling card. So I like under 52.5. Feels like a big number for a game involving San Diego State that runs the ball so much.
Yeah, this matchup is going to be problematic for the Hawaii defense because that defense has been bulldozed on the ground, allowed 560 rushing yards in the past two games. And that's, a sign of trouble when you're going up against a San Diego State team that likes to run the ball. That was a bad loss for the Aztecs last week. You know, 10-point home favorites over San Jose, knock out the quarterback and still lose the game. So I think the Aztecs got a good shot to bounce back here. Warriors outgained the Lobos. By the way, Hawaii outgained New Mexico 503 to 499 in that game last week. That was a shootout, over 1,000 total yards. This is going to be a different type of game. The Aztecs are just going to try to run it right down the throats of the Hawaii defense, and I think it's going to be tough for Hawaii to get many stops. At the same time, I can't stand Carson Baker, the quarterback of San Diego State, can't make many plays through the air. Siobhan Cordero is a much better passing quarterback for Hawaii. He was 33 of 43 for 410 with four touchdowns last week. I would lean under the total like you because I think San Diego State's ground attack is probably going to control this game. But this is a tricky one to handicap too because San Diego State has so many problems throwing the ball. And I think that's what Hawaii is going to have to – they're going to have to do that to have a chance in this game. So you're going to have one team that's really going to want to throw it all night and another team that's going to want to run it all day. So I would lean under, but – like you said, I don't play many totals.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks for the insight. I know you're busy. Really appreciate it, and good to connect.
You bet. Thanks, Doug.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
All right, that's going to do it for this pod. Thanks to Matt Eumanns, and thanks to Wes and Jeff Sherman yesterday for the Masters betting preview. And tomorrow will be Mr. Executive Director John Murray to talk a little NFL. So fun week, three separate pods. We tried to keep it moving. sort of the metrics suggest that is what you want, but plenty of interesting details and insight as well. So we'll catch you here tomorrow.